So welcome everyone to Carving a New Path. My name is Andrea Hyland and I am the host of this show. If it's your first time listening, I wanted to say that this podcast began in 2020 in response to all the change that people were experiencing. And I began to invite conversations with guests about listening to your inner voice and how when things are falling apart or changing, it's also a way of calling in something new to be birthed or new ways of being in the world. So those conversations continue. And today's show, episode 38, is with Pamela Gibbs. And we're calling this show, Don't Hide the Hard Stuff. So that may be something you can all relate to with chaos and change. And a few words from Pam as we begin this is that she believes that healing Earth begins by healing our relationship with our deepest self. And the defining challenge of her life has been learning to accept chronic pain as the teacher that would restore her to a deeper and more honest relationship with herself. Writing has helped her to find this deeper purpose, to take what on the surface appears to be disconnected fragments of an inconsistent and confusing life, and then find the story. And as it turned out, her story to tell is deeply rooted in our ineffective response to climate change. So before we have the conversation, I'm going to share a few more words with the listeners. I want to begin by saying that Pam and I first met in 2019, and we have had hours and hours of conversations while she has explored, while I have explored, where she's been unpacking her experiences with chronic pain and how this also relates to climate change. So think about that. The body of a human and the body of the earth and the interconnectedness that is there. And so as she shares some of her story, I want you to think about your own early experiences and how they have evolved throughout your life as information that leads you to question and explore the hard stuff. So this is where we begin today. And Pam, I'm going to turn it over to you. I know we've had lots of conversations. So wherever you want to begin telling your story.
Well, you threw out the tidbit of reflect back on your own early life.
Yeah.
And that's where I want to begin.
Beautiful.
To begin, because it took me years. It took me, actually, it was writing about how I was seeing climate change and healing chronic pain. I could see similar patterns, themes in both. And so I kept following the trail down into the darkness. And last winter, when I was writing about, I went deeper into writing about, well, when did I remember about climate change? And it was when I was in second grade, which was 1969, 1970. And it was a very clear memory. I remember I had this like visceral, emotional, oh my God, panic. And I remember, I'm 99% sure I saw it watching Jacques Cousteau. And I remember going into second grade and we were learning how to write essays. And I wrote an essay about climate change and how we were doomed. And we had to stop burning fossil fuels and we had to get on it right away. And I remember there's this image that stuck with me of this cold blue ocean. And it was like, all the skyscrapers or buildings, tall buildings, were underwater, or just the tips, very tips sticking out above water. And there was this seagulls. That was the only sound was seagulls and the wind. And I had this foreboding of war and famine and And this was what I saw was something in Europe, but it was on the coast. And that stayed within me. And so I wrote this paper for my second grade teacher, who must have thought I was just, I don't know what she thought. So I was aware of it, and I was aware of Earth, and this is actually what motivated me to study science going forward. Even if I sort of forgot all the climate change in that second grade memory, it wasn't like I buried it in a place where I couldn't access it. It was there. I just sort of pushed it to the side, so that's where climate change began with me, this issue of climate change. And so I was surprised when all of my chronic pain ended up back at that story.
Well, and I think it's really a good place for anyone to go back to those early childhood memories, those early visceral experiences, because it wasn't something that was in your mind a lot. It was like even feeling the panic. It's like that is a bodily sensation that happens. And those early memories, they can lead us to I'll just use the big word of purpose, our mission on Earth that we've come here to explore, without even knowing how that's going to evolve. Because your story would have been, okay, you studied science and you could maybe tell a little bit of that story. And then it shifted also. So it wasn't that it was like, oh, I've chosen one path here that was awakened as a child. It's like, how does that evolve into the even deeper work that we've come to do or be?
Yes, and that is, I wouldn't have discovered this without writing, without really pursuing the trail down.
So I know that you went to college and studied science, but is there anything you want to share in between the second grade awakening and college, or would you like to kind of go there?
No, I think actually what happened between second grade and going into college is relevant.
Okay, yeah, so
As
for
it's relevant because I was a complete misfit. I
it.
didn't fit in. And it was a very painful and frustrating and confusing way to get through life. And I had to shut a lot of myself down to do that. And although I was motivated to study science because I had this big sense of, well, this is how you do it. If you study science and get data, and then you can have reasonable arguments and help persuade people to do something differently. But I have to admit that, like, the lack of, or I have to share that the lack of support from the community and understanding and not seeing people really address it as it should have been addressed, should be addressed, kind of, I think when we don't feel supported by our community, we're trying to find this like halfway place in between that's very murky. And we're not good at doing anything. We're not good at fitting into the community, and we're not good at living our purpose either. We're in this like limbo land or purgatory. So when I went into college, when I went to college to study, and I went to Wellesley College, so it's a credible academic institution. I was just kind of like allowed. By that time, I had learned to just allow the system to shape me. And so I never went into college like, oh, I'm here to study climate change. I did know I wanted to study, I studied plant biology, and I wanted to use it to take on problems like Dow or Monsanto. But it wasn't this firm, like, this is my passion, this is my mission. I just allowed myself to be guided by other people, because that's how I had survived.
Well, and at that point, as you were studying plant biology, not that we have our whole life mapped out, when we were first in college. I mean, I wanted to be a social worker, and I went to a college that didn't even offer a social work program. It was like, where do I fit in here? Oh, sociology, and after 2 years there, I was like, they don't have a program for me. And so I transferred. So just know I'm asking the question, not as, oh, you arrive at college, you've got the whole thing planned out. And did you have a sense of, because you continued your education in different ways, did you have a sense that you wanted to stay in academia, that you wanted to do research, that you wanted to work for a Dow or Monsanto? Yeah.
No, I
What was
definitely
the
did not.
evolution of that?
I definitely did not want to work for a Dow or Monsanto. And
Okay.
that's where all the money was.
I wanted to clarify that. Yeah.
No, I that I was just I had that I very idealistic passion of oh, I want to save the world, and all the NGOs or the academia people are gonna want me. And you have to, like, I grew up in Sputnik. The Sputnik era, and they're like, we need scientists, we need scientists.
Yes,
And
yes.
so I was like, okay, I'm your woman.
Uh-huh, yes.
I got there and I found out that, well, they misrepresented the job career pool a little bit,
Okay.
that there was a glut. There was a glut of scientists, and it had become very competitive. And so me and my strategy of just kind of allowing the system to shape me, it was not, it didn't work out. That's, I think that's the short run. But they told me, like, if you go and do graduate studies, then you will be able to write your ticket. So I sucked it up, and that's what I did. But what I saw was I was not going to be writing my ticket. I was going to be playing a game of politics, and that's not my forte.
And so you did complete your PhD.
Yes.
Yes. And
Yes.
tell everyone what that is in, or anything you want to share about it.
I like to share this because it shows that I have this other side of me that it seems more respectable to conventional people. It is I studied in a program at Brown University, and it was called the Program in Cell Biology, Biochemistry, and Molecular Biology. I studied photosynthesis. And there was a lot. I'm not talking about, like, how are your peas growing. I'm talking about the process, which is on a very cellular organelle protein level, a lot about energy transfer. And it was one of those very interesting puzzles, but you don't really go anywhere with it. So I did get my PhD. During my doctorate, I realized how miserable I was, and I was beginning to see sense. This is not who I am, and I don't know who I am, and I don't know anyone around me who can help me figure this out. So I made a silent decision, probably the first I'd made on my own since back in second grade when I wrote the paper, is I am going to try one postdoc, which is the position after you get your PhD, a postdoc, two or three, before you try to apply for a more permanent position. And I was like, I will do one postdoc. And if it doesn't work out, it's my time to leave.
So what happened?
I I ended up in Phoenix, Arizona. And honestly, now I feel really like remorse at the chaos that was going through my life that just ran through everyone else's lives. But I ended up in Phoenix and everything went wrong. Everything. And I just kept thinking, there is some force in the universe that does not want me to do this. And I this and so true to my word, I actually said, well, this is it for my academic career. And this, what I should share at this point is when, as I was realizing that academia was not my path, that's when the chronic pain began to appear in my life. It appeared at the end of graduate school, and it became an absolute constant force or presence in my life throughout my entire postdoctoral career.
And I'm sorry that happened. I feel like that's something like, let's just be real with it. I'm sorry that you've had to deal with chronic pain, and I know that you have turned it into something that has been a great teacher. I mean, you have listened to the chronic pain. And I just want to take a moment for to the listeners that, as you know, here Pam figured out how to kind of fit into a system that she didn't feel like she was a part of, but you figured out, you know, that it's that misfit feeling that many of us who are awakened to the things that are happening within and around us, like, okay, this doesn't, I don't fit here, but I'm going to figure out a way to fit here. And that the words that you said, a force in the universe does not want me to do this. And so I want the listeners to hear that, you know, has there been a time in your life when a force in the universe did not, you just feel like things just aren't working. This isn't the plan. And then you're hit with something like chronic pain. And that's where the story continues. So how about sharing a little bit of that or whatever comes to you? Because it is, as I've said in the beginning to everyone, we have spent hours and hours and hours talking about, especially in the last 6 months, we have really had long conversations about what you're writing and what you're discovering in the writing. So, what would you like to share with the listeners?
Without getting too far ahead, because I think that is a hard part, chapter in or s session in itself, and I think it deserves
Another show.
it deserves its own space. And
Right.
the reason I say this is because I know that one of the things that was most reassuring to, has been most reassuring to me as I've healed is hearing other people tell their hard stories and showing that it's possible to, you know, it's that there are other people out there who do this, who get through this. And, you know, sharing the awkwardness and the frustration, all of that. And I think that deserves it
More
has
than 10,
there's
more
a
than
gra
10 minutes.
there's a gravity to it, and I don't want to skim over that at all. So I think talking about maybe you know, here I am, leaving academia, and I'm still inspired by pictures, images of scuba divers in Jacques Cousteau, or Born Free, and people out in the bush in Africa. And I realized somewhere along the way, I realized that maybe I was more attracted to that sense of being away from civilization and actually doing something productive than I was to the actual science. But at the time, as I was leaving academia, I felt like so angry. So I felt angry, I felt betrayed, I felt and I still felt confident that the world wanted me, even though I never saw any strong evidence of that. I was able to, for better and worse, it's like I knew the world. I still had the sense like, well, the world, someone wants me. But I didn't know who that was. I thought it would be easy. I thought it would be easier than it was. I think if I had known what I was in for, I'm not sure I would have taken that leap. But I also knew what my body was so exhausted and in so much pain. I also knew I couldn't keep going on. So it, and sometimes I still reminisce and said, oh, you could have gone to this person and you could have been studying algae in Australia or this or that. And it sounds like a safe place, but I wasn't the person. Even if it had been a safe place, I was not the person to be in that safe place. Life wanted me for something else. And so I think it's important for listeners to understand that. And some people may have read that or heard it once, but to actually hear somebody talking about it, what that experience is like when your life wants you to go one way and you want to go back to where it's safe. You don't want to go to this place where there are no I just say, at least in my experience, I was not taught how to go into the unknown. I was taught to that we wanted to stay on the known path, the safe path. And I think it's important for listeners to hear that you can go to these wonderful academic institutions and you can still end up in these really bizarre corners of the universe. And that there are other people who have gone to wonderful academic institutions who've also ended up in these bizarre corners where they feel lost.
And I really want everyone to hear that no matter where you are, there are moments where you may feel lost, and that that is something that we're addressing here, that feeling of lostness. And I'm wondering, Pam, in the little bit of time that we have left, if you want to just speak in general about the don't hide the hard stuff and kind of, and maybe how that came up as something to highlight in this first conversation that we're having.
That is a beautiful question to end this first chapter with. I was not taught how to face the hard stuff. I come from a family with who have passed on that trait for generations. We don't talk about stuff. And so you end up like not having the skills to recognize and talk about the hard stuff. And what is climate change? Or if you want to look at beyond climate change, loss, species loss, what is the collapse of Earth's ecosystems about? It's the hard stuff. And we don't want to talk about it. We, with great serendipity, this is Earth Week. This is Earth Week. And I point that out. I live in a wealthy demographic. I myself don't pay, like, don't keep myself financially afloat. Some years I have, the last year or so, maybe not so much. I live in a wealthy community and they're at war with each other. They won't acknowledge it. I live in a ski town. And so there's this whole identity and economic engine tied to consuming and recreating. And then there's this other part of their personality that's all about Earth Week and sustainability. And they don't work together well. I'm not saying they're at actual war. It's like a split in their psyche, the community's psyche. And they don't want to talk about the hard stuff. The hard stuff is the people in this community are driving the whole economic engine that, or people who live in this demographic is better to say, are driving the whole economic system that is ruining the planet, and yet they really struggle to have a conversation about a deeper conversation about what's really going on. Like, why did we have all this effort to lower our community emissions and they just went up again last year? And that's a hard conversation that I realize now after having done all this transformational work. It's like, well, they're not equipped to have it. They can't have it. And so, does change have to be hard? Does sustainability have to be hard? No, but I don't believe we're going to get any traction with it if we won't avoid the fact that we're the ones causing the problem. Which circles back to my belief of healing the earth belief begins with healing our relationship to ourselves.
Yes. And in many ways, it feels like that's a good place to end. And for everyone to think about this healing your relationship with yourself being the number one top priority. Because from there, you make choices and decisions.
You find inner strength and courage, and you just begin to learn. You begin to learn. And I know there's a lot of people maybe who can't hear this, but I suspect that many of the people listening to this sort of podcast will maybe be asking these questions and have this inner sort of swamp of, I know something has to happen, but I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah, and I'm gonna ask you in a minute. How you'd like to, if there's anything you'd like to say to complete this. And one thing that I'm going to encourage people to do is think about some of those earliest memories, because though that's really where the innocence begins. That's where your essence is. That something that you're noticing, something that you might not have words for, but you have a body memory around something. And I mean, I'll just say my earliest memory is the death of my brother who died of SIDS, and I was 4 and I found him. And that started me off on a whole lifetime of exploring grief, loss, and trauma and the different places. And it's made me who I am today because of that relationship with myself, healing that, and getting to know myself from that viewpoint. And we all have something that started us on a journey. And somebody else's might have been joy, like the memory of joy, and finding that you're at a place where you don't have a connection to that joy. Well, then that's a place to dive into. So I'll leave my words around this and just ask you, how would you like to end this today?
I think it's tied up neatly. I think it ended exactly where it was supposed to end.
Beautiful.
the next chapter can be more about some really dark times. But
And
it's also that's also those really dark times is when I began to, like, some strange stuff began to happen. Maybe not often, but often enough that I just it's that's when I began to recognize there's something else going on here.
And that's all part of it, part of the exploration. So I'll thank everyone for listening today, and I thank you for being here, Pam, and I look forward to our next conversation and diving into we'll see what the title is for that one, for the next chapter of this. And for anyone who wants to just stay connected with Pam, there's a link to her Threads page that she's just beginning, and all that's in the show page description. So look there and you can connect with her on that part of the journey. All right. Thanks again.
Thank you, Andrea.
And thanks to everyone for listening.